is VOA News. I'm David Byrd. The head of the World Health Organization said Wednesday the number of cases of infection of the new coronavirus in China had stabilized in the past few days. However, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus warned that the apparent slowdown should be viewed with extreme caution.
The number of newly confirmed cases reported from China has stabilized over the past week. But that must be interpreted with extreme caution. This outbreak could still go in any direction.
Meanwhile, the Provincial Health Commission in Hubei Province, the epicenter of the outbreak, announced Thursday that the number of deaths rose by 242 to a total of 1,310. That daily number was more than twice the prior provincial record. The number of new cases in Hubei jumped to 14,840, as the commission said it had begun including people who were diagnosed through new clinical methods beginning on Thursday. President Donald Trump is praising Attorney General William Barr for withdrawing the sentencing recommendation for a convicted Trump confidant. AP's Tim McGuire reports.
President Trump says Attorney General William Barr and others at the Justice Department were right to pull back the 7 to 9 year sentence recommendation for Trump's good friend, Roger Stone.
You have murderers and drug addicts, they don't get 9 years. 9 years for doing something that nobody even can define what he did.
Stone was found guilty of lying to Congress, obstructing Congress, and witness tampering. In protest, the four prosecutors resigned from the case. One also quit the Justice Department.
That's AP's Tim McGuire reporting. For more on these stories and the rest of the day's news, be sure to visit our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. Italy's far-right leader Matteo Salvini is defying prosecutors who voted, or after Italy's Senate voted, to lift his immunity from prosecution. As Lucy Fielder reports, the former interior minister could face a trial over refusal to let migrants disembark at an Italian port.
The accusation that he illegally detained migrants at sea last year when he refused, as interior minister at the time, to let them disembark from the Gregoretti Coast Guard vessel, ignoring pleas from human rights groups. Magistrates believe that was an abuse of power that amounted to de facto kidnapping. Salvini was defiant when he addressed the Senate hearing before the vote.
I think I have defended my homeland. I do not ask for a prize, because I received a salary for that. But if there must be a trial, so be it.
Salvini, the head of Italy's anti-immigrant League party, could face up to 15 years in jail if he's eventually found guilty by Italy's tortuous legal system.
That's Lucy Fielder reporting. NATO has agreed to take over some of the training activities carried out by the U.S.-led coalition against the Islamic State terror group in Iraq. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said the alliance's agreement in principle would have it handling some of the coalition's current training activities.
In the first instance, this will consist of taking on some of the global coalition's current training activities. Ministers also agreed to explore what more we can do beyond this first step.
The move is a direct response to demands from the Trump administration for European allies to do more in the Middle East. The chairman of the Iowa Democratic Party has stepped down after the botched vote counting in the state's caucuses last week. AP's Mike Gracia reports.
Troy Price has resigned as chairman of the Iowa Democratic Party in the wake of the caucus process meltdown that included delays in reporting results, inconsistencies in numbers, and no clear winner. Price announced his resignation in a letter that says, in part, the fact is that Democrats deserve better than what happened on caucus night. The Iowa caucuses were held on February 3rd, but it wasn't until February 6th that the state Democratic Party issued what it said were complete results. However, based on the information available, the Associated Press said it was unable to declare a winner. The campaigns of Democratic presidential candidates Pete Buttigieg and Bernie Sanders both requested a partial recanvass of the Iowa results. Mike Gracia, Washington.
For more, be sure to visit our website, voanews.com. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Thursday, February 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Malawi rights groups have called for a nationwide protest today to force the resignation of Electoral Commission Chair Jane Ansah.
Jane Ansah appeared before the Parliamentary Committee on Wednesday to answer questions on the competence of the Electoral Commission and on the management of the electoral process. She was, in fact, quite defiant. Basically, she did not accept any wrongdoing.
Guinean opposition parties held more protests on Wednesday against a likely third term for President Alpha Conde. Zimbabwe's government reintroduces mealy-meals coupons. We'll get reaction from the opposition MDC. And South Sudanese protested Wednesday in support of President Salva Kiir's 32-state proposal.
The pro-government demonstration held at the airport was timed to coincide with the arrival of President Salva Kiir and other government officials who were returning from Kenya.
That's reporter Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba. We'll examine why lightning strikes are more deadly in Africa. And we'll also take you to a cutting-edge medical marijuana farm in Lesotho. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawi's Mbatho Electoral Commission Chairperson, Jane Ansah, says she will resign her post only if the Supreme Court of Appeal upholds the Constitutional Court ruling nullifying the results of the May 2019 presidential election. Ansah told the Parliamentary Committee Wednesday that the Elections Commission does not agree with some aspects of the court's ruling and would like the opinion of the appeals court. Meanwhile, the Human Rights Defenders Coalition has called a nationwide protest today, Thursday, to force Justice Ansah's resignation. Also on Wednesday, the Malawi Constitutional Court turned down a request by the Elections Commission and President Peter Mutharika to suspend enforcing the court ruling nullifying the 2019 election results. Rafik Hajat is executive director of the Institute for Policy Interaction in Malawi.
The Constitutional Court has vacated the stay application that was lodged by the Electoral Commission.
Does this mean that the election schedule in 150 days as the court order will go ahead as scheduled?
It will go ahead, but the Supreme Court has yet to hear the appeal. They did not hear the appeal until the Constitutional Court had entertained the application for the stay order.
Does this mean that the Elections Commission under Jane Ansah will now prepare the country for election?
Yes, they will have to proceed. In fact, parliamentary hearings are underway. As we speak, Jane Ansah appeared before the Parliamentary Committee on Wednesday to answer questions on the competence of the Electoral Commission and on the management of the electoral process.
Did she want a postponement, or did she say she had enough time or does not have enough time to prepare?
She was, in fact, quite defiant, and basically she did not accept any wrongdoing.
Some Malawians have questioned her readiness to oversee this election that is coming because of the argument they have made that she did not do very well in the May 21, 2019 election. What's the view there?
The view is, in fact, the court has ordered Parliament to ascertain the competence of the Electoral Commission, and that's what the Parliamentary Committee is doing as we speak. The court has also pointed out that the method of appointing commissioners and the composition of the Electoral Commission leaves a lot to be desired. And I think Parliament will have to come up with a solution to that. And indeed, way back in 2005, my institute, the Institute for Policy Interaction, had actually pointed this anomaly out 15 years ago. And we had prepared draft bills which would transform the Electoral Commission into a more professional and a focused body than it is today. And unfortunately, 15 years ago, the proposals met with a cold shoulder. However, today, Parliament is being very receptive to those proposals.
We do thank you very much again for talking with us.
You're welcome, James.
Afik Hajak is Executive Director of the Institute for Policy Interaction in Malawi. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. In Guinea, the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, the FNDC, renewed its nationwide protest yesterday, Wednesday, against a controversial constitutional referendum and parliamentary elections scheduled for March 1st. The opposition says 81-year-old President Alpha Condé, whose current and second and final term ends in December this year, wants to use the referendum to stay in power. But Information Minister Amara Sampare says President Condé is not plotting to stay in power. Faya Milimuno, the leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party and a member of the FNDC, says the referendum is a constitutional coup d'etat. He has called on the African Union and the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, to equally condemn constitutional coups the same way that they condemn and ostracize African leaders who stage military coups.
Here in Conakry, you had demonstrations in Kaloum, in Ratoma, in Dixin, Matoto, and Mata. You had also demonstrations in Koya, in Forekaria, many other cities around the city of Conakry. And as usual, there were 15 people injured, one of them by a bullet, and about 20 people were arrested. Despite all of that, we have renewed the call upon the people of Guinea to stand up. So tomorrow, the demonstrations will continue.
I saw the photos sent on WhatsApp, blockades set up, but at the same time, I saw riot police. This is why I think the government has expressed concern that the protests are turning into violence.
Most of the time, we end up having violence because the demonstrations are prevented violently by the police forces. It is our right to demonstrate and tell the government that what is going on is not constitutional. What is going on is not legal. So when we do so, we cannot tolerate the government to use violence against us.
The African Union just had its summit in Addis Ababa. I know there is some mediation or process going on by the United Nations Special Envoy and by the, I think it's the Francophone. Have you taken your appeal anywhere else?
We followed very closely what happened in Addis Ababa, where all the leaders of Africa united. They made a statement saying that the African Union doesn't accept any leader to manipulate the constitution, but they are not doing anything. Take the example about the ECOWAS leaders. Besides what the president of Niger has started to do, no other country of West Africa has voiced the fact that what is going on here in Guinea is a constitutional coup. For Guinean people, military coup and the constitutional coup that is going on, they are the same. If we are all the time very prompt condemning a military coup, we should do the same when a leader, after 2 terms, as the constitution has required, change the constitution. It is also a coup d'etat. So we have to fight that the same way. But the African Union and the ECOWAS accept some, you know, minor declarations or statements. They are not doing anything on the ground.
Faya Milimuno is the leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, February 13th. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. Hundreds of people turned out Wednesday for competing demonstrations in Juba, one to support and one to oppose President Salva Kiir's existing 32 South Sudan states when a unity government is formed. One demonstration took place at the Juba International Airport, while the other was held at the UN-run Protection of Civilians site. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
The pro-government demonstration held at the airport was timed to coincide with the arrival of President Salva Kiir and other government officials who were returning from Kenya. Mr. Kiir and his delegation traveled to Nairobi to attend the funeral of former Kenyan President Daniel Arap Moi and to Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, to attend an IGAD summit on South Sudan. who did not resolve the dispute over a number of states and their boundaries.
Welcome, welcome, Tennis Day!
Welcome, welcome, Tennis Day!
Welcome, welcome, Tennis Day!
Welcome, welcome, Tennis Day!
At the airport, pro-government protesters chanted, Salva Kiir is our president, 32 states a year. Some protesters carried banners which read, Welcome back our hero of peace. 32 states plus is a red line and should not be tight. Some placards read, Yes for 32 states, no return to colonial districts. Some protesters were transported to the airport on government-funded minibuses, a move denounced by some critics of the administration. President Kiir told his supporters at the airport the battle over a number of states will not be solved easily.
The fight was very heavy, and whenever the battle is heavy, you have to retreat so that you rest and relax.
Kiir smiled and waved to his supporters from his open roof car as he drove off, telling them he fought the good fight.
So I have fought the fight with my team and the rest is yours. I have retreated to come and join you, and this is what I wanted to share with you.
Speaking in Arabic, Juba resident Cornelio Wani, who took part in the airport demonstration, says he supports the 32 states as long as it brings peace and development.
We as disabled, we welcome the idea of 32 states, including Abyei, if it is for the good of the people of South Sudan, because we know South Sudan has been in conflict for long and we are tired, and that's why we do not want a political decision.
Juba resident Alphonse Kenyi, who is originally from Terekeka State, says he too wants the parties to maintain the 32 states.
We South Sudanese, we don't want our president again to take us back to the war, because the reduction of 22 states plus Abyei will bring a lot of problem again than this problem that we are. That's why we support him, that let him remain firms.
Not all those who turned up for the demonstration at the airport were in support of keeping the 32 states. James Lasso Yesua, a chief from Morobok County in Yei River State, says what he cares about is lasting peace. He knows ordinary people were not consulted when the president unilaterally created more states.
Because people of South Sudan were suffering, people were dying with hunger, they cannot move away from the town to town.
President Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar are expected to return to Addis Ababa this week for more talks on the number of states and their boundaries. The SPLM-IO has threatened to not participate in a unity government if Kiir continues to refuse to budge on the issue. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The Zimbabwean government has introduced what it calls a targeted coupon scheme to make millet meal, the country's staple, more accessible to most locals. Currently, millet meal is being sold at exorbitant prices in the black market. Information Minister Monica Mutsvangwa said Wednesday that the government will use its database of the most vulnerable citizens to compile a list of the coupon recipients. But Nkululeko Sibanda, the spokesperson for Zimbabwe opposition leader Nelson Chamisa, says the subsidies have not been reaching the targeted citizens due to government corruption.
If at all the subsidy has been put in place, it doesn't get to the people because of the levels of corruption in government and because of the scarcity of the subsidized commodity, to the extent that it then gets sold on the black market and ends up reaching the consumer or the citizens at the very same price as it would have anywhere without the subsidy. So somebody is using the name of a subsidy to withdraw money from the government purse.
I was reading an article Wednesday about the impact of the drought on the rural people, the farmers in the rural area, how the drought has severely affected their production. In that respect, don't you think it is good for the subsidies to go into place?
I think that the debate as to whether or not a subsidy would work or would be necessary at the moment is mute, because the subsidy is already something that has, as far as I know, been implemented. And what we're seeing is that because of the levels of corruption and the scarcity, of the product. The subsidy isn't reaching the intended recipients. So government has to deal with corruption in order to make sure that such a measure would be useful or worth commenting about.
Your president, Nelson Chamisa, was in South Africa seeking dialogue or South Africa's intervention for dialogue. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa is now the new chair of the African Union. Do you see the possibility of movement towards this dialogue on the African Union level?
Look, President Chamisa has opened himself up and said national dialogue is a prerequisite, is a necessity for this country, and that the dialogue should be credible and bankable. And the president wrote to the African Union under the previous chairperson in 2018 and expects that the new chairperson will continue to look at that request to ensure that there is peace and stability in Zimbabwe by taking appropriate action to bring or facilitate bringing the disputed elections of 2018 into focus of the continental body. The results of court cases both in Malawi and to some extent in Namibia indicate that a huge chunk of the African continent and the SADC region is moving towards a true democratization, and that we hope that the African Union would look at that and realize that perhaps it can take the opportunity to move itself away from being described as a club of all dictators to a club that necessarily helps the continent move a step forward towards complete democracy and the sustenance of progress of the African people politically and economically.
Nkululeko Sibanda is the spokesperson for Zimbabwe opposition leader Nelson Chamisa. He spoke with us from the capital, Harare. Lightning strikes in Africa can be more deadly than in other areas of the globe for a number of reasons. According to the Senegalese press, 20 people were killed in one region of the country alone this past rainy season. Mary Ann Cooper, managing director at the African Centers for Lightning and Electromagnetic Network, spoke to Ricky Stryak about what her group is doing to address the dangers of lightning strikes in Africa.
There are five different ways that you can be killed by lightning. One is a direct strike, which only accounts for about 3 to 5% of the deaths, at least in developed countries. Ground current, where lightning hits at a distance and travels through the ground, accounts for more than half of injuries in developed countries, and we think probably even more in sub-Saharan Africa. The other mechanisms are when you stand close to a tree, lightning hits a tree, and a side splashes or flashes across to you. If you're in your home and turn on the plumbing, then contact injury is another very small percentage. And then one of the other areas that we think also may higher in developing countries is whenever you have a thundercloud moving across the sky, it induces an opposite charge in anything underneath it, whether that's a TV tower, a hill, a tree, a person, a cow.
When we talk about infrastructure deficits and increased flooding in regions, whether there's a storm or not, obviously other factors come into play when we talk about deaths by lightning. How specific has the research been to conditions on the African continent?
We're still fostering lightning research in Africa. If you want to talk about infrastructure in sub-Saharan Africa, one of the reasons we've cut down the number of lightning injuries in developed countries is because we're always within just a few steps of a safe area, either a substantial building, that means one with wiring, plumbing, or a few steps from an all-metal vehicle. In sub-Saharan Africa, it's been estimated that 90% of sub-Saharan Africa dwellings are not lightning safe. Still built of mud brick, with thatch or sheet metal thrown on for a roof with some rocks holding it down, particularly in rural Africa. That means there is no metal running through the walls of those buildings so that if lightning hits the building or if lightning comes across and is going by ground current, there's nothing to keep the energy from getting to the people inside those buildings.
That was Mary Ann Cooper, Managing Director at the African Centers for Lightning and Electromagnetics Network. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Chicago. The tiny mountain nation of Lesotho made history in 2017 by being the first African country to issue licenses for the production of medical cannabis. It made history again when it signed deals with foreign investors to develop this lucrative industry and to manufacture complete products in Africa. VOA's Anita Powell visited one of the country's cutting-edge medical marijuana farms in the hills of the town of Maracabi to learn more.
High in the mountains of Lesotho, a green revolution is growing. Marijuana is not new to this tiny mountain kingdom. It's been used for centuries for medicine and recreation. The area's high elevation and low humidity make it a great place to grow the plant. But in 2017, Lesotho's government began issuing licenses to medical cannabis producers, throwing open the door for a new industry that has since sprouted up and brought in millions of dollars from foreign investors. MG Health, one of the top five producers, built a $23 million facility that employs 380 people, many from the local area. CEO Andre Botma says this is more than just a pipe dream. He believes that if done properly, fledgling cannabis industry can bring great value to Lesotho.
This is a medicinal product that we're creating here, and our company has various brands. Some of them are for sale South Africa at the moment. We're moving into the UK and France very short in the near future. We have exported to Australia already, and we are in the process of getting our extraction facility and our growing facility GMP certified, EU GMP certified.
Medical studies have only just begun to look at the effectiveness of cannabis's popular non-psychoactive compound, cannabidiol. In a 2017 report, the World Health Organization described its potential for abuse and dependence as low and said it found preliminary evidence that CBD may be a useful treatment for a number of medical conditions. MG Health makes a range of products distilled from their CBD-rich strain of the plant that claim to treat ailments such as epilepsy, pain, fibromyalgia, and anxiety. That, says Finance Minister Moketsi Majoro, is what makes Lesotho's cannabis industry stand out. It upends the traditional African narrative of exporting raw materials to the West.
We don't want to export bottles of raw oil. We want to export pharmaceutical products. And so we want to see as much as possible for every investment, the processing of this product up to the level of it being a pharmaceutical product.
That, he says, will bring Lesotho the one thing it so badly craves.
We have close to 200,000 youths that are looking for jobs in an economy that is not creating jobs that fast. So we need to be creative in terms of the opportunities that can be created. We have a natural resource here that we need to exploit. So this has just come through as an unbelievable opportunity.
It's too soon to say whether all this will work out. Will medical research confirm claims about the safety and effectiveness of cannabis? Can this tiny country sustain such a challenging industry? These, Botma says, are questions that also hang over him as he tries to navigate this new, exciting terrain. But for now, he says, he's going to enjoy the ride. Anita Powell, VOA News, Maracabi, Lesotho.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa News. Malawi's Mbatho Electoral Commission Chairperson Jean Ansa says that she will resign her post only if the Supreme Court of Appeal upholds the Constitutional Court ruling nullifying the results of the May 2019 presidential election. Ansa told a parliamentary committee Wednesday that the Elections Commission does not agree with some aspects of the court's ruling and would like the opinion of the appeals court. Meanwhile, the Human Rights Defenders Coalition has called a nationwide protest today, Thursday, to force Justice Ansa's resignation. In Guinea, the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, the FNDC, renewed its nationwide protest yesterday, Wednesday, against a controversial constitutional referendum and parliamentary election scheduled for March 1st. The opposition says 81-year-old President Alpha Condé, whose current second and final term ends in December this year, wants to use the referendum to stay in power. But Information Minister Amara Sampare says President Condé is not plotting to stay in power. And that is it for this Thursday, February 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London Twitter at Border Crossings or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.